Welcome in, sports fans. It's the Glass Half Full and ESPN Pensacola podcast with me, Jordan Glass. Thanks so much for tuning in. Right off the top of the show, again, sad news. Hate kind of having to do this again for the, I don't know how many times this week we've started off the show with some sad news or just on a little bit of a somber note, but some sad news from Knoxville. Josh Heupel, the head football coach at the University of Tennessee, his mom, Cindy, passed away. I mean, he's talked about his mom before and how much of a rock she was for him during his playing career as in college and then now as a head coach and moving up to eventually being a head coach through the ranks throughout his career. So just know it's a tough time for him right now. So we want to send our thoughts and prayers up to Knoxville and to the Heupel family and hope that they can find some comfort during this tough time. Western Conference Final Game 4 last night. Dallas had an opportunity to shut it down, and they didn't. I don't want to say they choked, because they didn't choke. They played a good game. It's not that Dallas played bad. I think it's just we finally saw Minnesota play a complete game. Right? They had flashes of what they can be. Last night, they finally put it together for an entire four-quarter game. And they come out 105-100, the final score of that one. Fight off elimination. Live to fight another day. Still in that weird situation, though, where now they've got to put this emotional win to the side, regroup, and get ready to do it all over again coming up on Thursday night. But, man, this was a great game. And like I said, this wasn't really because either team played poorly. This was just simply both teams played good, but Minnesota just played a little bit better. And I think, again, we just finally saw Minnesota play a full, complete game, and we had guys step up. Look, Anthony Edwards had 29 points. He started off, 17 of those 29 were in the first half. So he started off fast. I mean, he was on the ball as soon as that game got tipped off, and he was ready to go. 17 of his 29 points in the first half. Kind of trailed off a little bit in the second half. And we talked earlier in this series, and it was game one or game two, about how Kyrie started the game off fast for the Mavericks. Luka came in and picked him up in the second half when he kind of cooled off a little bit. That's what happened last night. Anthony Edwards starts off great in the first half, kind of cools off a little bit in the second half, and Karl Anthony Towns stepped up in a big way, had 25 points of his own, finally found that rhythm we talked about. We talked about how somebody would have to step up and be consistent, and we finally saw Karl Anthony Towns with that consistency last night, and it was a big reason why they were able to win this game. Because, I mean, if you look at this, Dallas at home, with the way that they played, Luka and Kyrie both played good. Just wasn't good enough. You know, if you compare the two big doubles of Kyrie and Luka for Dallas and Karl Anthony Towns and Anthony Edwards for Minnesota, Towns and Edwards just outplayed them just enough. Just enough. Dallas had 30 points off of turnovers. Usually, if you are in any kind of sporting event that has turnovers, whether it's football or basketball, and you have that point differential off of turnovers, usually you got a great opportunity at winning that game. But credit Minnesota for not allowing those turnovers to spoil their chance of extending the series. And again, I can't say enough about Karl Anthony Towns. After spending a good portion of the postseason saying he needs to be more consistent. The guy was consistent. He was big for them last night. I know everybody's going to want to talk about Anthony Edwards, and rightfully so. He's the big name for that team there in Minnesota with the Timberwolves. But, man, with Karl Anthony Towns on the floor, scoring-wise, Minnesota was plus 17. They were like minus 5 without him. He impacted the way that game flowed. And that's exactly what they needed. So big shout out to Karl Anthony Towns. A big reason why we're talking about having a game 5 coming up on Thursday night at 7:30. So we'll have to see. The Timberwolves will have another opportunity to fight off elimination, and the Dallas Mavericks will have another opportunity to close out this series. I can tell you, probably going to be another good game. We have not had any bad games in this series. Despite the lopsidedness of the series lead right now and the fact it is a 3-1 lead for Dallas, man, we've had some great games. We've had some absolute classics, so I'm definitely looking forward to Thursday night's matchup. Again, tip-off for that game going to be 7:30, I believe, on TNT. You can tune in and watch that game. How about in the NHL, the Panthers and the Rangers? First of all, I've got to correct something I said on the show yesterday, because if there's one thing that you are going to learn about me following along and being a part of the glass half full here on ESPN Pensacola, is that I am going to own up. If I say something wrong, I will own up to it. And I was wrong yesterday. I was saying that the Panthers had the 2-1 lead. It was actually the Rangers that had the 2-1 lead. So just correcting that. I just wrote it down wrong in my notes and just went with it from there. But it was, in fact, the Rangers who had that 2-1 lead. But now it is tied at 2 games apiece after last night's 3-2 win in overtime for the Florida Panthers. Sam Reinhart scoring that winning goal there in overtime. And the great thing, you talk about the Dallas and Minnesota series in the NBA Western Conference Finals and how that's been great games. How about this series? 3 of the 4 games so far played in the Eastern Conference Final for the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs have gone to overtime. These two teams are battling it out. They're leaving it all on the ice. And you talk about somebody leaving it on the ice. Shesterkin for the Rangers, man. The job that he does there at the end of the second period, he was just getting assaulted in the net. And was no doubt had that Kevin Hart meme of him just yelling, "Help, help me." I guarantee you that was what was going on in his head, because he had no help from his teammates. He was having to deflect some pretty good looks by the Florida Panthers. And the Florida Panthers, by the way, were up at that point 2-1. They could have made it. It could have been 4-1, if not even 5-1, heading into the third period. But because of the play of Shesterkin, I mean, you can't say it enough. The guy is massive in the net for the Rangers, and the Rangers are as good as they are because of his play. They didn't really have anybody else step up and help him last night, and that was a frustrating thing. But you definitely look to him for that leadership role. I mean, he sets the tone. And he did a great job last night. Played his butt off for the Rangers. I mean, 2 of the 3 goals he gave up were both on power plays, including the winning goal. So, I mean, when you've got that manned advantage, yeah, you're going to find ways to find the back of the net. That's the whole point of power plays, right? It's to give you that opportunity and give you that competitive edge to find the back of the net because you've got that extra man out there. So, I'm not going to come down too harshly and be like, well, he could have done better in those power plays. Because, I mean, eventually it doesn't matter how good of a goalie you are. You're going to give up power play goals. Because, like I said, there's just too many men out there to keep up with when they have a man advantage. So he let 2 get by him on power plays, and that really was the difference in that game. Had he not done that, we're talking about the Rangers being up 3-1. But, man, this series, I said it going into this series. I thought it was going to be a great series, and so far it's turning out to be a pretty darn good one. I'm looking forward to Game 5. We're going to have Game 5 on Thursday night on ESPN. So we got 2 Game 5s coming up Thursday night in the NBA Finals, or the NBA Western Conference Finals and the NHL Eastern Conference Finals. So definitely looking forward to that game for sure. Both of them, really. Definitely going to be crucial, especially for the Minnesota Timberwolves. You got to win that one too. You got to bring that series within 3-2, because you got to get to 3-2 before you can get to 3-3 and then have an opportunity at winning it in Game 7. That's the battle that the Timberwolves now face. As far as the Panthers and the Rangers, well, they're just going to keep swapping blows like they're Apollo Creed and Rocky Balboa. They're just going to keep going right back and forth at each other. So who's who in that situation? Because technically they both wore the red, white, and blues in different movies. I guess you'd have to say the Rangers would be Apollo Creed, because he was the original to wear the red, white, and blue. He was the first to do it. So anyways, got off on a little bit of a sidetrack note there, but we'll get back on track. Let's keep it in the NBA, because we are quickly approaching the NBA offseason. Like I said, we've got to close up the Western Conference Finals. Then we'll have the NBA Finals between either Boston and Dallas or Boston and Minnesota, depending on how that Western Conference Finals series goes. But once we're through with the finals, all eyes will be on the offseason and what we can expect from that. and come up with some possible options. Well, I didn't. Brian Windhorst from ESPN, he came up with the options. I just want to kind of run through some of these because he came up with 10, and I have 4 that I thought were pretty intriguing moves in the offseason to keep an eye on. The first one being, I'm trying to decide, do I want to go in the order that I have them here? Do I want to kind of mix them up to kind of save one of them for last? I'll just go ahead and go in the order that I have them. LeBron opting out of his contract with the LA Lakers, becoming a free agent, and signing with the Philadelphia 76ers. I know. It's not necessarily the top place that anybody would expect him to go, but June 29th, he can opt out. He can become a free agent. And if he was to go to Philly, he'd be replacing Tobias Harris, who just really didn't work for the 76ers, right? They brought him in to kind of be the guy that could help kind of lead that scoring attack for them. And he just didn't pan out the way they thought. So they'd be looking for a new person to come in. And LeBron would be, obviously, I think on anybody's choice that's looking for anything to add to their team, or just not even looking, really. If LeBron's a free agent, you're going to go after LeBron James, right? If you've got the money to throw your hat in the ring, you're going to throw that hat in the ring just to see what happens, because you never know. So I think with the 76ers, they've shown interest in Paul George. Yeah, I think that's kind of really their top target. I think Philly and Orlando are kind of the two teams that are like, we really are interested in what happens with Paul George and whether he stays with the Clippers or not. So who knows what plays out there if Paul George decides to go to another team as a free agent. If he decides to stay in L.A. with the Clippers, we'll talk about that coming up a little bit because Paul George's name is on another one of these potential offseason scenarios we could see in the NBA. So we'll talk about that then. But, I mean, if Paul George doesn't go to Philly, LeBron could be a great option for him. So who knows what we see happen? I think that could definitely be a lot of fun to see in the 2024-2025 season in the NBA. How about this one? OKC, the Thunder, signing Klay Thompson. First and foremost, he would have to have a lot of zeros and commas to come away from Golden State, right? I mean, you're set up on a team that is just coming off of a historic run in the NBA where you guys were the top dogs pretty much every single year. You still got Steph Curry on your team, and you can just add a couple of pieces here and there and make your team better and be right back in that NBA championship hunt. So it's going to take a lot to entice a guy like Klay Thompson to leave Golden State. But if they were to get him, that does provide that veteran presence there. Remember, we talked about OKC throughout the postseason. They were a young team, started to kind of show it late there in the series against Dallas in the Western Conference semifinals. But for the most part, really did a great job of playing out of their age, if you will. Having a guy like Klay Thompson is going to bring in a guy who's a dynamic shooter, is going to help you offensively, but he also can be a guy that's going to help lead and kind of coach up this young talent that they have there in OKC. So I think if they could pull him away from Golden State, it would be a great move for the Thunder if they could bring in somebody like Klay Thompson. But again, these are all hypothetical. These aren't things that are being talked about or are in the works of happening. These are just kind of hypothetical situations that Brian Windhorst, the NBA analyst for ESPN, came up with. And he actually, has the full list of the 10 on ESPN's website. So if you want to see all the other ones, like I said, I'm only talking about 4 of them right now. If you want to see the other 6, you can definitely go check that out. As well, it's a pretty good read on that article there from Brian. Let's see, Lakers. This was the other one that we talked about with Paul George. The Lakers sign Paul George. I think regardless, either way, whether LeBron James stays in for his final year of his contract or opts out but decides to redo a deal with the Lakers, I think either way, you look at a situation with Paul George coming in to the Lakers, it'd be great for them, whether King James is there or not. Paul George is a guy who would be that kind of next step offensively, right? Obviously, with LA, you're not quite sure what's going to happen with D'Angelo Russell. Is he going to be a free agent? You're going to have to still find that big-name player that can be in there and help facilitate and run your offense with Anthony Davis. So who's going to be that guy? Paul George would be a great fit. And then if LeBron stays, then you're adding another key player to that lineup that's just going to make you even better. So I think trying to go after Paul George, if the Lakers were to throw their hat, like I said, right now, I think from what I've heard, Philly and Orlando are the two that are really paying attention the most to what happens with Paul George. There are definitely other teams, and the Lakers may be one of those other teams, but Philly and Orlando, I keep hearing, is the top two teams that are really kind of paying attention to what happens, seeing if he opts out to go to free agency there with the Clippers or if he decides to stay in L.A. So, and that's another thing. Would Paul George want to stay in L.A.? Right? Like, if he opts out of his contract with the Clippers, is it something as simple as just switching out and going to the other L.A. team? Maybe he's not necessarily fond of staying in L.A., so maybe he's wanting to go somewhere completely different. So, there's different levels to this that you have to consider when you're kind of looking at these hypotheticals. Yes, it would be great. Whether LeBron stays or not as a Laker, if you were to add Paul George, A-class move by the Lakers. Give it an A grade all day. But does Paul George want to stay in L.A.? I mean, isn't him opting out of that contract with the Clippers, isn't part of it to get out of L.A.? I know the Clippers reworked the deal with Kawhi Leonard, so that probably is playing a part in it as well. But also, do you want to stay in the same city, or do you want to move on somewhere new, somewhere fresh? Start completely over. And that's the options he would get at a place like Philly or a place like Orlando. So it'd be interesting to see what happened with Paul George. But, I mean, obviously, if a franchise like the Lakers is showing interest in you, you're going to listen, right? It's like if you're a baseball player and the Yankees are interested in you, you're not going to turn them down and be like, you know what? I'd rather go play for the Cleveland Guardians. No, you wouldn't. You'd rather play for the New York Yankees. They're the New York Yankees. You see somebody wearing a pinstripe baseball jersey 500 yards away, if your eyesight's that good, you see them that far away wearing a pinstripe jersey. You don't have to ask what jersey that's for. You don't have to ask what team they support. You know, pinstripes means one thing, the New York Yankees. Right? You see a purple and gold basketball jersey from a far distance off, you know that that's an LA Lakers jersey. Now, you could get surprised and they turn around and it turns out to be an LA Sparks jersey whose logo and colors are exactly the same almost as the LA Lakers. The Sparks, by the way, if you're unfamiliar, the WNBA team there in LA. But still, you get my point. It's a very noticeable and recognizable brand for a reason, and that's because of the success that they have. So if Paul George if he gets a knock on the door, although they wouldn't knock on the door now, they'd probably just send an email or a text to his agent. Either way, if the Lakers reach out to him, he would be crazy not to listen to what they have to say. Even if he does want out of L.A., right? Like that would be the one of the things to be like, well, hold on now. We could just move to a different neighborhood, you know, maybe move over to Beverly Hills, hang out with the celebrities and the movie stars with a, you know, nice house in the hills there, nice view of the Hollywood sign. Maybe just change scenery here in L.A. and just go play for the Lakers, right? How about the Orlando Magic? We talked about them possibly going after Paul George. But what if they went after somebody else? What if they went after D'Angelo Russell? Because, see, here's the thing with the Orlando Magic. They need a couple of pieces to help. And Banchero talked about this after they got knocked out of the postseason by the Cavs in the second round. In the opening round. Banchero talked about, it's like, we need somebody that's going to set the tone. We need somebody that is going to be able to be the guy that sets everybody else up. You know, he talked about it. He talked about him. He talked about Franz. He talked about everybody on the team. He's like, we can score, but we got to have somebody that's going to be able to set us up. D'Angelo Russell would be just that. Plus, Orlando Magic were one of the worst. Actually, they were the worst three-point shooting team in the NBA. Despite their record, despite winning their division, despite getting to the NBA playoffs, they were still one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the NBA. You had a guy like D'Angelo Russell who shot over 40% from the three-point line, and he made 227 three-point shots during the regular season. That fixes that three-point shooting issue because now you've got a guy who's dynamic from the three-point line and shoots extremely well from the three-point line in D'Angelo Russell. Also, He's a guy who can set up Banchero. He can set up Franz. He can set up all those other pieces that the Orlando Magic have that have made them the team that has been one of the most improved organizations in the NBA over the last couple of seasons. We've seen them continue to grow and continue to build and continue to take those next steps. And now they're to the point to where adding a guy like a D'Angelo Russell, adding a guy like a Paul George, if they can manage to land that, that's all that they need. And look, Banchero is probably the most recognizable and probably the best player that the Magic have had since Dwight Howard was there, I don't know how many years ago, right? Remember Dwight Howard and the dunk contest? He's putting on the Superman cape. They made it to the NBA Finals with him that year. They've got a guy like that in Banchero now. They just need somebody that can come in and be the setup guy. And they can make threes. So if you're a Magic fan and you hear the rumors of them looking at Paul George, you're like, oh, that would be great. I think, honestly, this situation that Brian Windhorst brought up with D'Angelo Russell would be even better for the Magic. Because he does check off a good portion of the boxes. Doesn't check all of them off, but he is a guy that can hit the three. He is a guy that can help set up Banchero and the rest of the team. So I think bringing in a guy like D'Angelo Russell for the Magic, that would be a great offseason move. But again, still got a lot of time before we hit to the offseason and see what happens and see what plays out. But it's the NBA, and if there's anything we know about the NBA, it is that the offseason is always going to be equally, if not more fun, than the regular season. It's going to be a lot of fun to see what happens once we hit to that June 29th mark and players can start opting out of their contracts and becoming free agents. In the NFL, Justin Fields addressing the rumors or the comments, I guess you could say, more so comments than rumors, of him possibly returning kickoffs and punts for the Steelers. A few weeks ago, Danny Smith, who is the special teams coordinator for the Pittsburgh Steelers, made the comment that you could even see Justin Fields out there returning kickoffs and punts. Fields was asked about that yesterday at OTAs, and he's like, nah, I'm not here to that. I'm here to play quarterback. But he also went on to kind of jokingly say, you know, it's funny how the media and social media kind of hear one thing and they take it a certain way and they run with it. And look, I was guilty of it. I talked about it when those comments were made. I talked about it right here on the Glass Half Full, and we discussed how it would be a bad idea to put Justin Fields in that situation. Well, Justin kind of cleared up the whole thing of, you know, he was like, you know, it's funny to see all the people kind of overreact to this because they don't understand the context of which it was said, because they're not a part of the locker room, so they don't necessarily, you know, when Coach Smith gets up there and he's making those comments, they don't necessarily understand the context in which he's bringing it up. And Justin Fields basically said, look, he was using me as an example to prove the point that no matter who you are on this team, that you are going to be held responsible and that your number could always be called on special teams. He was trying to set an exaggerated example of that, so he picked Justin Fields to do that. Lots of people thought that he was serious and was like, oh, they're going to put Justin Fields back there to return kickoffs and punts. Seems to be that maybe that was just a comment that was taken out of context. So Justin Fields not likely to be returning punts or kickoffs for the Pittsburgh Steelers this upcoming season, which is probably the best thing for them, to be honest, because that's your backup quarterback. You don't need him tearing an ACL, returning a kickoff or something like that, or breaking a leg, returning a punt. For college football, moving on now to the level of college football, some teams that kind of struggled a year ago that could possibly be a little bit better in 2024. I got a couple of them worth talking about here, and some of these, one or two of these may surprise you. None of them, I will say, is in the SEC or the ACC. So we are not going to be, if you're a Florida fan, if you're a Clemson fan, I know it was a bad year for you last year, especially if you're a Florida fan or anybody like that. We're not talking about those teams. We're not talking about the SEC or the ACC. This is, I'm strictly seeing Big Ten, Big 12 teams on here. So we will start it off. Utah. Utah actually going to be playing in the Big 12. This season, coming out of the Pac-12, moving over to the Big 12. Kyle Whittingham, of course, back as their head coach. Cam Rising back for his, 55th year of eligibility. I mean, this guy has been at Utah. It seems like he's been at Utah just about as long as Kyle Whittingham has. Maybe even longer. I don't know. He's just been there a while. But as long as he keeps getting cleared and given the eligibility by the NCAA and Utah still wants him around, they're going to keep him around. He's a good quality quarterback. He's one of those guys that he's a game manager. And that is not, and I hate that that phrase has a negative like attachment to it. Because being a game manager as a quarterback, it's not a bad thing. So whenever you hear me refer to a quarterback as a game manager, you know, I know that Cam Newton has this whole game manager, game changer type thing that he does where he talks about quarterbacks and he puts them in either those categories. Are they a game changer or are they a game manager? For me, a game manager is not a bad thing. It's really not. So when I talk about a quarterback and I say he's a game manager, it is not meant to be derogatory whatsoever. And Cam Rising is a game manager. He does exactly what he needs to do for that Utah offense. He's also a guy who is very sneaky in the sense that if you think you've got him from the backside, like if you're coming on a backside blitz and he senses that, oh, he's going to roll out, use his legs to pick up the first down, and you're going to be standing there going, the heck just happened? I didn't know this guy could run like that. He's got some wheels on him. He can move. So I think Cam Rising being back for another year for Utah. They did finish 8-6 a year ago. They lost to Northwestern 14-7 in the Las Vegas Bowl. But I think having Cam Rising back, Kyle Whittingham back as the head coach, there's continuity there. 8-6 a year ago, definitely could see them become a 10-win team in 2024, especially in the Big 12. There's no reason why a team like Utah, with the talent that they have, there is no reason why they shouldn't be competing for a Big 12 championship in 2024. I think you look at it, Texas out of the Big 12, Oklahoma out of the Big 12. Nobody quite knows what we're going to get from the Big 12. Is TCU going to be the TCU team we saw them be a couple of years ago? Is Baylor going to be back to being Baylor and scored 60, 70 points a game? What are we going to get from the Big 12? I think it is primed and the door is open for Utah to step in and take control of that conference in year one of being a part of that conference. So Utah could easily win 10 games for me this year. I think they could easily compete, if not even win, the Big 12 championship this year. In my mind, really, honestly, and truthfully, now that we have a 12-team playoff, Utah could very well be a playoff team in 2024. So I do think they're definitely going to be improved from a season ago. USC, they were 8-5 last year in 2023, moving now to the Big 10. So just like Utah is moving to the Big 12, USC moving to the Big 10, and they're bringing in D'Anton Lynn to be their new defensive coordinator. And this is what you're going to get with him as your defensive coordinator: stingy, aggressive, physical defenses. Perfect. And I say perfect because USC playing in the Pac-12 the last few years. Look, if there's any conferences that are known for not playing defensive football, it's the Pac-12 and it's the Big 12. But now with you going to the Big 10, you're going to have to play defense. That's the name of the game in the Big 10. So bringing in this defensive coordinator, it's a smart move for USC, and I think it's really, honestly and truthfully, it's going to be a big boost for them defensively. They're going to be more aggressive. They're going to be more physical. They're going to be very much D'Anton Lynn has some ties to the Baltimore Ravens. So the type of defense you expect the Baltimore Ravens to have, that's the type of defense that you're going to see here for USC. And then you add that a guy like Miller Moss, who did pretty well in the Holiday Bowl for him last year when Caleb Williams decided to opt out of playing in that game. So, you know, he got the go for it. Did decent for him. He's expected to be the starting quarterback and replace Caleb Williams. You've got guys like Zachariah Branch on the offensive side of the ball. Look, the offense is going to be young, so they're going to have to rely on a lot of new faces this year, Zachariah Branch and Miller Moss being two of those new faces. But I think that they are going to be just fine. I think they're going to be a pretty good team this year. Again, they're playing in the Big Ten, so they do have to compete with Michigan. They do have to compete with Ohio State. They do have to compete with Penn State. But I think they're definitely, if you look at 8-5 a year ago, here's my thing with USC. 8-5 a year ago, 8-4 in the regular season, losing in the bowl game. I don't know if they are a team that is going to be any better than 8 wins. I do know they're not going to be worse, right? So if USC is, you know, an 8-win football team again next year or a 9-win football, it would not surprise me one bit. I think that on paper, they're going to be a better football team because their defense is going to be better. It's going to be more physical, more aggressive like we talked about. But I do think at the end of the day, 8-9 wins, you may not see it on the actual record at the end of the season, but this team definitely is going to be better. They're going to be building and getting in the right direction. And it's interesting to see USC is taking the steps to become a Big Ten football team by bringing in a new defensive coordinator that's going to bring in this attitude, this aggression on the defensive side of the ball that you're used to seeing from Big Ten teams. So it's very interesting because Oregon has stepped it up in physicality, right? Like with the drills that they run and the way that they run their practices, Oregon has stepped it up in physicality, but they aren't changing schemes. USC is changing schemes defensively to try to fit in more with the Big Ten. So it'll definitely be interesting to see how that plays out their first year in that conference. And our final team we're going to talk about on today's show, Nebraska. You got Matt Rhule back as the head coach. They went 5-7 a year ago. Let's be honest. Matt Rhule was brought in to be a cleaner, if you will. You know, when you watch those mob movies, when they do a hit, they call the cleaner to come clean up the mess and make it look like that mess never happened. That's what Matt Rhule was called in for in Nebraska. Scott Frost, it was a mess when he was fired. They needed to bring in somebody that could help clean that up and get them moving in the right direction because Nebraska, we've talked about it before. There are programs across the landscape of college football that maybe aren't doing so hot and haven't done so hot the last few years, but they are proud organizations. They are proud fan bases and proud teams, and Nebraska is one of them. And so I think they brought in a guy in Matt Rhule who could help clean up the way the program was and build to get them back to where they need to be. They're still a little ways off from where they want to be, but you look at it, Matt Rhule coming back as the head coach. Quarterback play and turnovers really were their problem last year. They were close and in several of the games that they lost. It was the bad quarterback play, the bad decision-making, the turnovers that really hurt them, especially down the stretch of the 2023 season. No word on who the starting quarterback is going to be just yet, but Rayola is expected to be the young quarterback there. He was number 2 quarterback in the 2024 class, expected to be the starting guy once the season kicks off. And he's a talented quarterback. He's not going to make those same mistakes that you saw a year ago. He's definitely going to improve, and definitely looking forward to see what happens with Nebraska under Matt Rhule here in 2024. They are going to be in a good position, I think, to get bowl eligible this year. 5-7 a year ago, they were one game from it. Don't be surprised if Nebraska's not playing in a Las Vegas bowl or a Holiday Bowl once we hit that time of the year. So I think Nebraska is definitely a team that can take the next step in the right direction, and Matt Rhule was a great hire for them. Right, when they pulled him away from the Carolina Panthers, it was a smart move, and it was a great hire. He's a guy that not only, again, can kind of clean up that mess, but he's going to get this program moving in the right direction, and he's going to be doing some great things. I mean, look at what he did at Baylor in his time there with the Bears. Had that team just moving, and then leaves to go take over the Carolina Panthers job, then comes back to the college ranks to take over this position and clean up this mess with the Nebraska Cornhuskers. So definitely looking forward to seeing the progress that Nebraska makes, not only this season, but over the next few years. I think Matt Rhule is the guy that can help lead them to where they need to be. And we'll see a little bit of an improvement from them this upcoming season for sure. That is going to do it for today's show. Thank you so much for tuning in. This has been The Glass Half Full with me, Jordan Glass, and ESPN Pensacola Podcast. Have a great Wednesday. I will talk to you tomorrow.